This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Thousands of people protested across France Saturday against the imposition of the health pass for a wide array of social venues, and the public outcry in the battles with a fourth wave of coronavirus infections coming about. It is a third weekend and a row that people opposed to President Emmanuel Macron's new set of COVID-19 anti-COVID measures took to the streets in an unusual show of determination at this time of the year. The United States has joined the United Kingdom and Israel in accusing Iran of carrying out a deadly drone strike that killed two aboard a tanker off Oman. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made the announcement in a statement on Sunday. Blinken said, upon review of the available information, we are confident that Iran conducted this attack, which killed two innocent people using one-way explosives, a lethal capability it is increasingly employing throughout the region. He added that there was no justification for the attack, which follows a pattern of other attacks and other belligerent behavior. Iran earlier denied being involved. Israel's prime minister directly blamed Iran and made a veiled threat about retaliating. 6 months after seizing power from the elected government, Myanmar's military leader has declared himself prime minister and said he would lead the country under the extended state of emergency until elections are held in about 2 years. The state of emergency was declared when troops moved against the elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi February 1st. This is VOA News. The United States' top infectious disease expert is warning that more pain and suffering is ahead as COVID-19 cases climb again and officials plead with unvaccinated Americans to get inoculated. Dr. Anthony Fauci also said on ABC's This Week that he does not foresee additional U.S. lockdowns because he believes enough people are vaccinated to avoid a recurrence of last winter. However, he said not enough are inoculated to crush the outbreak. Currently, 58% of Americans 12 years and older are fully vaccinated. However, the director of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, said on CNN that U.S. vaccinations are up 56% in the last 2 weeks. The Financial Times reports on Sunday that Pfizer and Moderna have raised the prices of their COVID-19 vaccines in their latest European Union supply contracts. The new price for the Pfizer shot is €19.50. Against €15.50 previously, according to the newspaper, citing portions of the contract seen. The price of a Moderna vaccine was €25.50, and the contract show up that's up from €19, and the first procurement deal, but lower than a previously agreed €28.50 because the order had grown. The European Commission said Tuesday that the EU is on course to hit a target of fully vaccinating at least 70% of the adult population by the end of the summer. Tokyo's governor Sunday urged the public to abide to health protocols and get vaccinated after daily record high COVID-19 cases were reported in the Japanese capital on consecutive days. She toured a vaccination center located in an underground passageway connected to Tokyo Station, which aims to inoculate 2,000 education workers and others per day. Case member numbers in the Olympic host city surged to a record high of 4,058 on Saturday. That's according to the Metropolitan Government. It exceeds 4,000 for the first time, and it overshadows the games. A panicked tourist in Turkey hurried to the seashore to wait for rescue boats after being told to evacuate hotels in the Aegean resort town of Bodrum due to the dangers posed by nearby wildfires. There's more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, August the 2nd, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The Somali government has officially rejected an Africa Union report in which it proposes options for the future of AU peacekeeping mission known as AMISOM after December of this year, 2021.
In fact, the experts that conducted this assessment did not sufficiently consult with the federal government of Somalia. And as such, the report is poor, and the options provided, in our view, are not good options at this point.
That was Somali Foreign Minister Mohamed Abdirizak. And the Gambian government is denying reports suggesting that the exiled former dictator Yahya Jammeh is planning to make a home visit. And in East Africa, Uganda lifts lockdown restrictions that took effect last month after a surge in COVID-19 infections.
Border borders are now allowed to move up to 1800 hours. That is 6 o'clock.
That is Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who said that daily infections had reduced from 1,735 people to less than 100. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start with our top story. The Somali government has officially rejected an African Union report which proposes four options for the future of AU peacekeeping mission known as AMISOM after December 2021. Options proposed by the AU assessment team are: one, a hybrid Africa Union and United Nations mission, a reconfigured AMISOM mission with modifications, deployments of East African standby forces, or the exit of AMISOM from Somalia. The AU report was critical of the Somali government and federal member states, stating that the fundamental challenge to stabilization emanates from failure by the federal government and federal member states to resolve constitutional review, power, and resource sharing. The report said, quote, Somali political actors do not respect their own agreements. Political actors show deference to the clan rather than the federal constitutional order. And the Somali government angrily responded to the report, accusing the assessment team of not engaging with the federal government. In a letter written by Foreign Minister Mohamed Abdirizak, Somalia says that the assessment is, quote, devoid of realities. The letter obtained by VOA Somali Service accuses AMISOM of lacking effective command and control and inability to conduct operations with Somali security forces. VOA's Harun Maruf spoke to Somali Foreign Minister Mohamed Abdirazak and asked him about the Somali government reaction to the report.
The reaction from the Somali government to this report is that the report, in fact, the experts that conducted this assessment did not sufficiently consult with the federal government of Somalia. And as such, the report is poor, and the options provided, in our view, are not good options at this point. Instead, what we would prefer is that Somali, the transitional plan, be the basis of a future mission in Somalia, and that should be considered. Yes, we did criticize the report, but we did have a very fruitful peace and security meeting here in Addis Ababa, where we presented our views. It was very constructive. Our views were welcomed, and the way forward is now to have a senior technical team from Somali side, the United Nations, African Union, and the European Union.
But which of these four options do you prefer? Do you have an alternative format for the future of AMISOM and the collaboration with Somali forces after December 2021?
We prefer an option, as I said, that emphasizes STP. And none of the four options currently presented mention or emphasize STP. We see STP as the way forward.
STP is the Somali Transitional Plan. What does it say with regard to the future collaboration of AMISOM and Somali forces?
The Somali Transitional Plan is basically a plan that pursues the enemy while building the capacity of the Somali forces. And it is a plan that eventually transfers security responsibility to Somalis. It's a plan where the leadership of security will be taking their views and orders from the Somali side. And so we see this is the best way to transition AMISOM security responsibility to Somali security responsibility.
The recent AU report was also very critical of the Somali government and the federal member states. It says the fundamental challenge to stabilization in Somalia emanates from the failure of the federal government of Somalia and federal member states to resolve constitutional review, power and resource sharing issues. They also say there is a reluctance and failure by the federal government of Somalia and federal member states to adhere to the constitution. What's your response?
My response is a question back to you, Harun. What does that have to do with security and military mission? Somalia is a state that is recovering from years of collapse, that is rebuilding, that is going to have its constitutional be reviewed, that is going to have elections, you know, a country that will, as you know, is organizing elections. We are coming back and we are moving forward. We see this assessment, as you mentioned, it is just a scapegoating. That's not has nothing to do with the mission we're discussing. Somali government and its constituent federal member states work together. And as you can see, that they're working together now on election security and you know, the conduct of elections.
What they are suggesting is that the relations between the federal government and federal member states have been broken for many years, and that has impeded the efforts to build national army, reintegrate the army. And are you saying the relations between the federal government and the regions was good all along? That wasn't the case. There were political differences, which observers believe impeded the progress on security and political front. Your answer?
My answer is that the Somali Security Transitional Plan, which should be the center of this whole discussion, and which, by the way, was also endorsed by the United Nations, is a plan that was fully consulted. The consultations were made with the federal member states as well as the federal government. They worked together on these issues. So anyone telling you that security in Somalia and the liberation of certain areas from al-Shabaab and the like is as a result of poor relationship between the federal government and the federal member states. It's not telling the whole truth.
That was Somali Foreign Minister Mohamed Abdelrazak speaking to VOA's Harun Maruf. And meanwhile, the United States military has confirmed carrying out a third airstrike against al-Shabaab militants in less than 2 weeks. Sunday's strike was in support of Somali government forces in the area of Kesad in the central Galmudug state. The Somali government earlier reported the strike in an area where federal and U.S. trained forces were fighting al-Shabaab militants, calling it a major blow to al-Shabaab's means to wage war against the Somali people. This is Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. The Ugandan government has started lifting lockdown measures imposed in June that had been instituted to stem the second wave of COVID-19 in the country. Public transport, shopping malls, as well as borders, the common means of transport in the country, will now resume operations. Uganda's President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni says that ultimately the country will ensure that many people are vaccinated to reduce infections. Reporter Mugume Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
While addressing the nation this weekend, Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni said daily infections had reduced from 1,735 people to less than 100. He attributed the reduction to lockdown measures put in place in the month of June.
Borders are now allowed to move up to 1,800 hours, that is 6 o'clock. They are now allowed to carry one passenger at a time or cargo. They should strictly maintain SOPs. Wearing a mask is a must for both the rider and the passenger. malls, arcades, and other business centers had been closed. These can open and must strictly follow these guidelines.
Among the measures is registration of shop owners and attendants, presence of CCTV cameras, dedicated entry and exit routes, and must have compliance officers. Public gatherings, such as meetings, weddings, burials, as well as churches, remain prohibited or restricted to not more than 10 people.
The international and the local collective sports events are allowed under strict observance of SOPs. No spectators, mandatory testing of players and officials within 72 hours of the event.
Casinos, gyms, cinema halls also remain closed, and so are the bars, which have not opened for about 2 years. Schools also remain closed, and the president said the country should embrace online education as the country's success solution, vaccinating people.
I've directed the Minister of Health and Finance to urgently secure vaccines for Uganda, for Ugandans, by paying, not just depending on donations. Due to the hoarding of vaccines by some of the actors in the world, Uganda is embarking on its own vaccine manufacturing capacity. To date, three candidate vaccines are at different stages of trial. Whereas this may take us some time, this is an effort in the right direction.
Slightly more than 1 million people have been vaccinated against COVID-19 out of the targeted 21 million people across the country. Mr. Museveni also said the government is working with scientists in the country to come up with the treatment of COVID-19. At least 2,600 people have died of COVID-19 since the first case was announced in the country in March 2019. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, says that the continent's death toll from COVID-19 has jumped 17% in the past month. In a media briefing recently, the Africa CDC said the infection rate had also increased and called on countries to ramp up testing for the virus. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
In his weekly online press briefing from Ethiopia, the head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, John Nkengasong, gave a grim picture of the continent's COVID-19 situation during the month of July.
So there's been an average increase of 4% of new cases over that time period. In terms of the new deaths over the last 4 weeks, we've recorded an average of 17% average new deaths over that same period. In terms of testing, as a continent, as of today, we have conducted about 58 million COVID tests. And last week alone, the continent conducted about 1.3 million tests, but that represents a decrease of about 19% over the previous week. The overall positivity rate stands at 11.2%.
Overall, the continent recorded 239,000 coronavirus cases last week and 6,000 deaths, an increase of 7 deaths over the previous week. The Africa CDC blames increased deaths on virus spread events like the recent looting in South Africa and the celebration of Eid al-Hajj, the end of the Muslim pilgrimage in Mecca. It also blames the Delta variant, the most contagious form of coronavirus, which has spread across the globe in recent weeks. The continent's public health agency was happy that some African countries like South Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya have managed to limit the virus while allowing economic activities to go on. Africa has so far received about 80 million vaccine doses from COVAX, the UN-backed global initiative to distribute vaccines to low- and middle-income countries. The senior director for Africa at the U.S. National Security Council, Dana Banks, said Wednesday her country has started to ship some 10 million vaccines to Africa.
We are happy to announce that we will be sending over 5 million doses to South Africa, over 5 million doses to South Africa of Pfizer vaccines, as well as 4 million doses of Moderna vaccine to Nigeria. So we're very excited about that. And we hope that these will go a long way in helping to provide safety and health security for the people of Nigeria and South Africa, which will then enable them to get back to their regular activities, their economic activities, and help them to build back better.
The World Health Organization has said at least 700 million vaccines will be sent to Africa by the end of the year, enough to vaccinate about 30% of the continent's 1.3 billion people. However, Matshidiso Moeti, WHO regional director, said African governments and health officials need to do more to encourage people to get the vaccines.
With the expected influx of vaccines, it is crucial that countries scale up all the aspects of vaccine rollout to reach as many people as possible. This entails mobilizing adequate resources, including finances for the vaccination activities, for the logistics and the personnel, as well as addressing any concerns by communities, including those fueled by misinformation, to increase vaccine confidence and demand.
So far, less than 2% of Africans have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. The continent has officially recorded 6.5 million cases of the disease, although the real number is believed to be significantly higher. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Gambian government is denying reports suggesting that the exiled former dictator Yahya Jammeh is planning to make a home visit. The denial followed trending social media reports quoting a Guinean newspaper that Jammeh had been granted permission to visit the Gambia to pay homage to his late mother. Pan Derimbai reports for VOA from Raleigh, North Carolina.
In a statement issued over the weekend, the government spokesperson Ibrahim G. Sankare debunked what he called the false and unfounded reports circulating on social media suggesting that the government has granted permission to Jammeh to return home to pay tribute to his late mother. The government's reaction followed a publication that was made by a Guinean newspaper claiming that President Barrow and his Guinean counterpart Alpha Conde had purportedly negotiated for Jammeh's home visit during Barrow's recent visit to Guinea-Conakry. Ibrahim Asila is Gambia's information minister.
The Gambia government has not been involved in any negotiation, either directly or indirectly, with any foreign power, as it is alleged in a media report circulating in social media that our president had a discussion with the president of Guinea-Conakry on this matter and that an agreement has been reached. As you have seen in the press release, this is totally false. President Barrow did not have any discussions with the president of Guinea-Conakry on this particular issue.
Jammeh has been living in exile in Equatorial Guinea since January of 2017. He has been accused of committing gross human rights violations ranging from murder, rape, and torture. The motive behind the false rumor is not known.
I don't know the motive, but one thing certain though is that since 2017 to 2018, supporters of former President Jammeh have been making claims that they want to see him return back to the country.
Dudu Jah is the deputy spokesperson of the former ruling APRC party.
We as the National Executive Committee have not been communicated to. Besides the former president, we are in close contact with the people that he is with in Equatorial Guinea, and none of them gave us any message to tell us they are coming home or that information is true. We took it as another social media propaganda.
Jammeh's APRC party and President Barrow's National People's Party have been holding talks for a possible merger to be formed between the two parties ahead of the December 4th elections. The government has been taking heat online after being accused of betraying Jammeh's victims.
It's all politics, and I believe it's about the rumored APRC NPP alliance that a lot of people don't like it to happen, because for them they believe it is positive for both sides, and it will foster reconciliation in this country. So they're trying to peddle every propaganda or information to distort or make our people angry so that this coalition will not be a possibility.
Information Minister Silla tells VOA that there is nothing wrong for the APRC to form a merger with the NPP.
Well, the issue of mergers in politics is nothing new. Some of those people that are accusing the NPP are the very ones also that are also talking directly or indirectly to the APRC.
Silla also said it is wrong for anyone to punish the APRC because of their past affiliation with Jammeh.
The APRC as a political party has not been accused and rightfully proven in any court of law in the Gambia to have been engaged in any right violations in this country.
Jammeh supporters this past week convened a protest march in which they call on President Barrow not to implement the recommendations of the Truth Commission. They have accused the TRRC of witch hunting their leader, a charge the commission has always denied. Just says Jammeh's home return would be one of their key demands if there should be any merger between the two parties. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. And it's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. And for that, we go to Abuja, Nigeria, with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin our Olympic coverage of Africa's performance on day 9 with reigning Africa and Commonwealth 100 meters hurdle champion Tobi Amusan, who on Sunday became the second Nigerian woman to qualify for the final of the sprint hurdles at the Olympics after winning her semifinal heat in 10.62 seconds. The 24-year-old has now joined Glory Alouzi, who raced his silver medal finish 21 years ago at the Sydney Olympics in that exclusive club. In the steeplechase, Peru's Chimutai remains in frame to become the first Ugandan woman to win an Olympic medal. This was after she clocked 9 minutes and 12.12 seconds to reach next week's 3,000-meter steeplechase final at the ongoing Tokyo Games. Chimutai says she now has her eyes set on a podium finish in Wednesday's final. In the men's steeplechase event, 7 African men will be in the running for a medal when the 3,000 steeplechase goes off. Kenya's Abraham Kibwat and Morocco's Sofiane El Bakkaki, the pre-games favorites, both booked comfortable passage to the final and having had economical runs in the semis, they should be fresh enough to put on a good show come race time. And to the 100 meters event, where South Africa's Akane Simbini finished outside the medals in fourth place in the final of the men's 100 meters final. Akane Simbini finished fourth in 9.93 seconds. Italy's Lamotte Marcel Jacobs outshone a field of unusual suspects to claim a shock Olympic gold in the men's 100 meters on Sunday, breaking retired Jamaican star Usain Bolt's 13-year-old on the blue riband event. Nigeria's Enoch Adegoke pulled up after 50 meters with an injury and did not record a time. And out of the 800 meters, where Kenya's quest to retain David Rudisha's gold medal in the 800 meters received a major boost on Sunday after two athletes qualified for the Tokyo Olympic Games final. Emmanuel Kuri and Ferguson Rotich will line up in the final on Wednesday and will be charged with the responsibility of bringing the gold home. Kenya has won the Olympic 800 meters gold since 2008 when Wilfred Bungi triumphed in Beijing, China. And now to another African hopeful in the 400 meters, where world record holder South Africa's Wayne van Niekerk kept his hopes of defending his title alive by progressing safely through the opening round of the 400 meters event at the Tokyo Olympic Games on Sunday. Van Niekerk finished third in his heat, clocking 45.25 seconds and qualifying automatically for the semifinals on Monday. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you very much, Samson, and have a great day. And that's it for this Monday, August the 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good week ahead, Africa.